Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their teardrop trailer that they have nicknamed Maggie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. As we're recording this here in California, the United States is still in the summer of the COVID-19 pandemic and still under somewhat of a lockdown. But that's changing. The country and the world are, in general, opening back up to work, travel, public food service, and beauty supply. So today we're going to talk about the Shetland sheep. Sounds very unscientific, but it's one of the cuter animals we've come across. I watched one wag its tail like a dog at people for about 10 minutes, so I can say that. This little sheep has been on a semi-permanent lockdown for most of the breed's existence by our current standards of time. People have had a taste recently as to what happens when that happens, but not to this extent. For most of the last 1,000 years, the Shetland sheep has had limited transportation within its region, limited food supplies, and probably for the most part, it didn't have a whole lot of new faces to see it on a regular basis. And yet, it still has a sweet personality. I'm just saying. Saying that the Shetland Islands are in northern Scotland doesn't quite give the accurate picture. These islands are in the north of Scotland, north of the main landmass, in the northern Atlantic, on a parallel with Fairbanks, Alaska, if that gives you a reference. To get there, you have to take a plane or a boat with lots of fuel. The Shetland Islands were supposedly first inhabited by the Picts in the late British Iron Age. Then the Scandinavian peoples, read Vikings, were next, and they were probably fairly likely to visit the Shetlands somewhat consistently, because it's in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean. I'll stop with the north part soon, I think, but go look on a map and you will see what I mean. These little islands were pretty much directly on the way from the Nordic homeland over to Iceland. Maybe it was a nice rest stop between raiding and trading. That's a lot of very cold ocean to traverse, and they needed somewhere to get a bite to eat and hit the loo. But in any case, in their wandering to and fro in the 8th and 9th centuries, it looks like the Scandinavian adventurers left some people and some sheep at the way station that became known as the Shetland Islands. Over the next few centuries, there was a bit of unfriendly discussion with Scotland, an absorption by Scotland, and that thing with Britain. Shetlands are not the average-looking sheep, at least to me. They look like you took a medium-sized dog with dainty little toothpick legs and threw a very thick, very curly sheepskin rug on top. They have a small head and kind of a pointed face, and they pretty much would fit perfectly into the set design for all of those shepherd hobbits in the Shire. As for the multitude of colors, I'm going to go to my handy-dandy Stories Illustrated Breed Guide to Sheep, Goats, Cattle, and Pigs. The Viking-inspired naming convention for the color palette includes light to dark gray, white, emsket, which is a dusky bluish gray, musket, a grayish brown, black, fawn, mioget, a yellowish brown, murit, a dark reddish brown, and dark brown. Please forgive my bad Norse. Nordic? Nordish. Damn. I'll go read the IKEA catalog to practice a little bit more. Back to the sheep. They're not only pretty cute, but they're one of the thriftier breeds out there, pretty much out of developmental necessity. I don't know if you go and look up the things we talk about, but if you look up the Shetland Islands, it's not like the pictures have tons of waving fields of grain and excess greenery. Fish, they've got it in spades. Oil, they found that there too. But for an animal that needs tender, loving care to survive there, with lots of cushy inputs, sorry, but you've got a very short shelf life, evolutionarily speaking. If you look at pictures of the other animal breeds from Shetland, the adaptation concept becomes pretty obvious. Shetland ponies, sheepdogs, cattle, geese, and ducks are all built for harsh and sparse conditions and for cold. These animals usually have at least more than one purpose and are very, very hardy. One of the more interesting things about these sheep is that they're so docile and easy, and they're considered great for newbies. I don't know as how that seems quite right, with anything that could be related to the same Ragnar that gruesomely pillaged my living room on the History Channel last season, thank you, Rick, but there it is. Maybe 1,000 years of evolution and adaptation and isolation in an area that doesn't have many predators, other than man, makes you a little more laid back. Killer whales and otters don't count as predators if you're a sheep, I think. The people of the islands weren't the only one impacted by the influx of new blood and cultures and habits. Shetland sheep have had their issues with survival in both a tough economic climate in the sheep world, but also with the influx of new and different genetics, supposedly to improve the breed's capacity. They're making a comeback, but like many breeds, it's a slow and precarious journey. Kind of like the Viking thing on the way over. Mostly. Sort of. Last fall, at the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival in Rhinebeck, we had a chance to speak with Judy Lehrhout. She's a school teacher, and a damn good one from the look of the information board she put together at the fair. She's also the owner of You Can Do It, Shetland Sheep Farm, in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. She's not only a master spinner and a fleece judge, but she raises Shetland sheepdogs and the primitive breed called the Shetland sheep. Listen, and you'll find out what that means. No blood or pillaging in the podcast, though. I promise. If you would introduce yourself, please, and tell me what kind of sheep you have, and tell me about your farm.
Judy Lehrhout, and I own You Can Do It, E-W-E, Can Do It, Shetland Sheep Farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I got started because I had a Shetland sheep dog. Shetland sheepdog had herding instinct, and my instructor said, "Oh, I'll give you 3 sheep." And so that's how we got started. We started with 3 sheep in 1995. A year later, I said, "Oh my God, I've got Shetland sheepdog. I need Shetland sheep." And that became the You Can Do It Shetland Sheep Farm.
So now this is not much bigger than the dog.
No, well, she was a Sheltie, so she was a little girl.
But these are cute little sheep. I mean, they're very manageable sized sheep.
These are. The girls are between. She's just not gonna.
We just pulled her out. That's why.
That's right. Okay, so they're usually between 75 and 100 pounds, and rams are about 125, some as much as 150. They have been a primitive breed, and they're also still a part of the Livestock Conservancy, trying to maintain the diversity in the fleece, in the flock. So this is Paloma, and she is a year and a half old, and she has a kind of long, wavy fleece and a great personality. Shetlands will wag their tails when they're happy.
We notice she's attention-starved because she comes to the gate and wants to be petted by everybody that walks by.
Oh, my God, yes. And demanding.
Demanding. But she's, a lot of personality so far in this little sheep. Not overwhelming personality, but just sweet, come look at me, I love you kind of thing.
And that's what I love about my sheep. Every one of them has a different personality. Every one of them has got the... I'm special. Pet me. Love me. I'm going to be the leader of the flock today. Somebody else can have it tomorrow.
So then now in terms of the differences, you talk about personality, but we see this board in back of you where there's all these different colors. Is that a characteristic of the Shetlands?
It is. Can I take you back there?
Yes, please do.
All right. I'm going to leave her here. At first, we're going to start with the different colors. All right, so if you count them, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 basic colors, and then there are varieties in terms of that. As you could see in Paloma, she's like a mixture of a whole lot of different colors. Then we have the markings. All right, Shetlands also have many different markings. These are all the markings that they took pictures of or documented from the Shetland Sheep Breeders Association. And you can see, I mean, they're all different kinds. I've been doing this for 20 years. I have some, but I've never had that. And there's another one that I haven't had.
But this is pretty much anything you could ever imagine. There's spots, there's stripes, there's colors, there's socks, stockings.
Yeah.
You've got one that looks like a Dutch belted cow in a way, right?
Yeah. I mean, and one that looks like she's got a lightning bolt on her.
Yes. So yeah. This is in, when you said primitive, what does that mean to you?
It means to me that the breed hasn't changed a lot over the years. There have been some changes. There have been other breeds brought in to make the animal better, okay? But in general, this animal stays the way it was when it came into being.
Well, and if this is the UK, this is an animal that has been a primitive breed there for thousands of years, I'm assuming?
For thousands of years. Matter of fact, I'm going to bring this in because this is an amazing book of the history of the industry on the Shetland Islands.
Holy cow,
and 800 BC, they have records from all the way back there. The Vikings brought them into the Shetland Islands, and that's just the beginning of this amazing story.
So if this is a sheep that originated somewhere we don't know where, do we know where the Vikings got them? Because I could see how that would go from ship to spot to spot to spot.
Yes, northern short tail breeds. So they came over from Norway, from that whole region, and then became a part of Great Britain.
So this is a true land race animal that it comes to one area, like our Longhorn or Florida Cracker or Piney Woods cow or the Mustangs in America. They come from Spain, come to Florida, come to Hispaniola, and then they adapt as they go through. So same thing, maybe Vikings brought these sheep
Similar. Yeah. The first sheep into North America, I mean, there's some that happened before. But in the 1980s, the first Shetland sheep were actually brought into Canada, into the Lion Country Safari, by Colonel Daly. And so that started the North American Shetlands. And like with anything, coming to the different country, to the different environment, and you're talking the United States, so you're talking East Coast, middle of the country, and West Coast. So lots of variety between all of that, but they're all, and Canada, but they're all North American Shetland sheep.
Okay. So when the Vikings brought them into the United Kingdom, do we know where? It's just the islands, or was it all over the whole country?
No, just the islands, and then also they brought them to Iceland. And Iceland being a more a lone island, separate from the rest of the world, their primitive animals stayed primitive a lot longer. So, and they're still very primitive.
So that's a great point, and it speaks to what isolation does for a population and adaptation.
Yes.
So additional genetics come in an area that's truly isolated, it changes things.
Well, because Shetland was a part of Great Britain, so you're going to get the influence from the British country or kingdom. And that did change things over time.
But
this
I'm
is
assuming
a long story.
It is a long story. No, that's the kind of story
it's
we
just
love.
Amazing. Yeah. Part of my study, my in-depth study to be a master spinner, talks about the history and how things changed over the years and how people tried to change it. Because it's an animal that was raised for its fiber, but it was also an animal that they had to eat because this was Shetland. I mean, it's not like today. You don't fly in by airplane. Okay? You got there by boat or you didn't get there. And so they had to make their world support themselves. And so your Shetland sheep did help. Not as much as some of the other animals, but they did provide some meat. And they provided fiber that not only made everything they needed on the island, but became a wonderful export. You know, the silk stockings, the lace stockings that were sold into Europe that became so popular. And, oh my God, the lace wedding shawls that go through the wedding ring. You know, that you get this wedding ring and you have to be able to bring the shawl through the ring in order for it to be real, to be the original Shetland shawl. So it's I could talk about this for years.
Yeah, I will be talking about that too. So actually, Ned, I'm glad you really brought up the fibers because you are playing around a little bit with the different textures and strengths of the Shetlands, correct?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about this here.
Okay. This was my in-depth study. When I got into Shetlands, I also got into the world of fiber and spinning, and I was always a knitter, but then other things, like I did learn to weave. But after 6 years of study in Canada at the Ontario Hand Spinners Master Spinners Program, I decided that I wanted to do an in-depth study, which is that last step. All right, so you go 6 years and you get a certificate, and then you have the opportunity to go for however more time to do a study. I started this in 2010. I was awarded my Master Spinners in the summer of 2017. So it took a while. I always wanted to take the diversity of one Shetland fleece. In the 1800s, they showed that they could get very, very fine lace, a medium yarn, so for sweaters and maybe socks and hats, and then use the britch or the coarse yarn to make fiber, textiles, okay? And so that's what my study was about. And so you can feel. So this was a very, very fine lace, and it took me several samples to be able to make the yarn, and some of it I still got docked for because, you know, that's very, very fine, and some of it is not so fine. So lace, light lace, things you could wear. You know, the people complain all the time, I can't wear wool. Well, you can wear this. Yes. You can put that next to your face.
It goes in a little tiny bag.
It goes in a little tiny bag, yeah.
That's beautiful. So this is the finer the grade. This is like the yaks where we learn that they make four different layers at depending on where you get it. The very close to the skin is maybe a soft fiber, and then as you work your way out, you might use it for something else, like weaving a rug or something as you get to the end. Is that
okay?
The same thing?
Similar, but this is... This comes from the neck, and what they would do is they would gather. It took more than one animal to make those wedding shawls, okay? So they would save the neck fleeces because that's the finest and the softest. And then, so they would save it, and then they would card it and spin it into cobweb. I've seen it. It's just, it's so amazing. This is not as fine as they make. Okay, so it goes from the body, from the head to this area here, which is the side. It's a little bit, we would call it micron count, okay? So this is a little higher micron count. It's still very, very soft. It's what I used to make this jumper. In the United States, we call it a jumper. In Canada, they call it, this would not be a jumper. A jumper would be a sweater. So, from the very, very fine, from the neck to the side, where we got this for something, again, you can wear next to your skin, but you can also make a sweater out of it. And then to the breech area,
that's beautiful.
Where you can... And I don't think I'd take it off.
Touching it. That's
so
beautiful.
It's woven.
This is
what they make suits out of. Okay?
But that's still very soft.
It is soft. I probably would be docked for that. Never mind. This is just a little sidebar about instructors from Canada.
Yes.
Who have certain ways they like to see things. They would want that to be stronger and a little bit coarser if you're going to wear it as a suit. But I've been to the mills, and I mean, the wool that they use, it's strong, but it's still soft.
Yeah, that's one of the characteristics of wool, is it not? There's strength to
that
fabric.
There's a lot of strength
to the fiber.
Right. And with the Shetland, it's considered the finest, softest wool from the Great British Islands.
Does it grow back? Do you shave it once and that's it? Because there's a lot of fur on that animal right there.
This was from March, from Miss Paloma over there, who you've met. And that's how long she was.
Already again?
And she's already that long.
Wow.
Some of them, and this again is the diversity. Okay, so some of them, it's a little shorter, okay, but still incredibly soft. I brought this back from the wool brokerage on Shetland when I was sorting fleeces with Oliver Henry, the fleece sorter. That was an incredible experience. So exciting.
Now, is this a staple? This is staple length,
this
right?
This is staple
length,
yes.
So at one end, it's dark brown, and then it's grayish.
Yeah.
Well, mostly gray on this side. Is that a characteristic of Shetlands, or that's one of these particular markings?
No, I have a number. As a matter of fact, my first Shetland was just like that, only hers was shorter. But she started with a dark, dark brown, and then she gradually grayed as it went down the staple length. And at one point, after I had sheared, she had a color change right here. It went from gray and became white. So over the year, their color changes. So what you got this year might be different. If you look at her now, look at how different she is.
That's really
much lighter, more white. Yeah.
May we just go? Okay. Yeah. So right here,
she has a wavy fleece. All right. But if you look up here by her neck, she's got a little bit softer, a little bit more defined crimp. And if we looked at the little white girl, you'll see that her crimp is extremely fine and defined. All right. So again, the diversity of a Shetland fleece and of the Shetland animal.
So can I assume that this is from this area here?
Yes. Yeah. This is her neck. Look at her neck. I mean, see how different?
Yes, but look at the crimp in that. Wow.
I know. And the chaff.
What a sweet little girl.
Yeah.
Well, now that, I mean, this is just the surface. I could see how you could spend 10 years in school and when all is said and done, there are many things, historic, cultural, you know, the economic, the textile industry.
Yeah.
This could
and
run
just, Yeah. Just going to the Shetland Islands and visiting. Yeah. I mean, people are so incredible there. And they're such survivors.
Yeah.
So
wonderful.
It's been an incredible journey. I grew up in Bayonne, New Jersey. So I was afraid of sheep in the beginning. And actually, I was 5 years old. My parents took a picture of me on a Shetland pony. So now I'm raising Shetland sheep. I love it.
If you had one like this, I don't know how you could ever be scared, because she's just the sweetest thing ever, isn't she?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome. Absolutely delightful.
The history behind this is phenomenal.
Yeah. And I feel like I've only touched the surface for you.
I am well aware of that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. But we're only here until tonight, and so...
Yeah, me too.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please tell your friends to join us. Please feel free to post any questions or comments that you might have to our social media sites. Our Twitter feed is at Backyard Green Films, spelled BKYRDGREENFILMS. Our Instagram is at Backyard Green Films, BackyardGreenFilms. Our Facebook is Backyard Green Films. Our YouTube URL is youtube.com/BackyardGreenFilms.
We want to thank Judy for joining us today. If you'd like to find out more about the Shetland sheep that Judy raises, please visit her website at youcandoit.com. That is spelled E-W-E, candoit.com. Also, please check out the livestockconservancy.org to find out more as well. If you find yourself in upstate New York, please stop by the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, and you can find out more information at sheepandwool.com. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2020.